Talking Men with Matt Webb on Cambridge 105.
So it is a fraction after 2:30 and welcome to this month's Talking Men. I'm joined in the studio as always by Councillor Nigel Beaumont, and we're going to be talking about more therapies available for men recovering from mental health problems. Good afternoon to you, Nigel.
Good afternoon, Matt. Nice to be here.
It's always good to have you in the studio. Now, at the end of last month's show, a gentleman called Richard messaged in asking about therapies available for people who are getting over post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. What would you suggest, or what are the things that are available for people who are going through that at the moment?
Yes, I think it's quite interesting because it's quite prominent at the moment, PTSD, particularly in relation to servicemen returning from the front and that sort of stuff. But I think it's not known, first of all, that it is something which can be suffered by a lot of people in a lot of different circumstances. Sudden shock in any circumstance can bring on PTSD. So, you know, it is something which is fairly prominent and brought to GP's attention quite frequently. There is a treatment which has been specifically designed for PTSD, and it's called EMDR, or Eye Movement Desensitization Reprocessing, which is a hell of a mouthful. But it's supposed to mimic the brain action when one is asleep. And it's related to fast eye movements, and it's supposed to be very effective. So, I mean, essentially it says specifically developed to help people with difficult traumatic memories, which can result from violent or traumatic event and often associated with military personnel. And interesting, one of my existing clients is a former soldier, and he was telling me that there's a big thing going in the States at the moment where they're doing one of these challenges, sit-up challenges, I think, or press-up challenges, bringing it to the fore and actually, you know, on social media, making it much, much more prominent. But essentially the technique is that as you are relating to the therapist, the traumatic experiences, you make rapid rhythmic eye movements when recalling the events, and that helps you to process them. It mimics the effect, the way the brain processes his memories and experiences while you're sleeping. So I don't know, I've never actually done it myself, I'm not trained in it, but I understand it is extremely effective. So that is one of the therapies, but of course CBT is the other one, and that's widely recommended by the NHS because it's really just providing more structured behaviours and enabling you to focus your mind on the structured behaviour rather than on the events which led to the PTSD in the first place.
Okay, and there are a whole host of other therapies available, aren't there? We're going to touch upon some of those today.
Yes, I just wanted to touch on a few. There are any number of therapies available, and if you do any research on the internet, you'll come across them. But I wanted to just pick up a few that you might well be aware of. The first is cognitive analytic therapy, then EMDR, which we've just spoken about, hypnotherapy and mindfulness, both of which are very much in the fore at the moment, and also relationship therapy, because, of course, it is something which is available to couples and to people in relationships, families, and indeed as well. And it's a slightly different form of therapy that is actually undertaken. So talking about CAT, cognitive analytic therapy, it's a combination of two of the therapies we've spoken about before, of psychodynamic therapy and CBT. So essentially, it's focusing on current thoughts and feelings and combining it with thinking about past experiences. So it's really just the analytic is the key to that, is really trying to look at the root cause of what the issues are, and then providing the client with a means to actually try and combat them and learn different processes and behaviours to just avoid the issues that were arising. So it's something which it's interesting to know that most therapists will try and combine a number of different types of therapy to get the best end result for their client. And this is one where, indeed, I do, using my CBT as well as psychodynamic therapy, because it just works so well. We touched on EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy, which is most prominent in the treatment of PTSD. Talking about hypnotherapy, hypnotherapy is quite controversial, and it's often labelled as a complementary therapy, mainly because the scientists are not really sure about it. They think it uses the power of suggestion and also a bit of the placebo effect. But there's no doubt that it is very effective in altering behaviours. you know, so smoking and that sort of thing. But it is used effectively for treatment of long-term conditions. And there are a lot of hypnotherapists out there who will also use it in combination with other therapies. But it's a genuine therapy that is offered. Mindfulness, of course, is something which is quite prominent. I don't know why it is. It's suddenly sort of come to the fore. And it's used as a therapeutic technique, and some therapists might use it, again, as part of the overall therapy. And it's really just focusing on one's awareness of the present moment, acknowledging your feelings, your thoughts, and your body sensations, so getting in touch with yourself. And it works quite well. There's a lot of courses that are out there. You can only do that without a therapist. And it's something, if you have the time, maybe to just do that, and might find that can address some of the issues that are arising. Spoke about relationship therapy, and it's interesting that there's a lot of organizations out there, people like Relate and so on, and through the NHS you can access relationship therapy. It's often using a combination of different techniques. It does depend on what the presenting issues are, but it's a different dynamic, of course, because you're there with your partner, your husband, your wife, whatever, and therefore the therapist has to really strike a balance between the two people and make sure that there is, a fair opportunity to be able to talk about the issues and what's causing the problems. But, you know, the sort of problems that appear in relationships are sometimes mental, sometimes physical, and they have to be addressed. But it's available on the NHS, and it's worth being aware of it, you know, in terms of what's around. So just finally, talking about how to access therapy, and we've spoken throughout this series about the NHS, and the NHS has a bit of a focus on CBT. That's because they can be measured, and they like to be able to measure outcomes. But of course, there are charities and charitable organisations that do offer not always free but low cost therapy, and it's worth looking into that. And people like Mind are very good at doing that. So if you are unable, or there's too long a waiting list with the NHS, go to someone like that. And then, of course, there's privately face-to-face, which has a cost and has a need for you to actually go to a therapist's premises. And increasingly, there's therapy on the internet. And it's something which I think is really addressing modern-day use of technology. And it's not only using Skype or something similar, but it's also using texting, for example. I am part of a network called Talk Life, which is something you can pick up on the internet, and effectively provides therapy through email and chat, you know, essentially. So don't ignore that. It does suit some people, particularly with busy lives, haven't access or able to be mobile. The internet is a very good provider. And, a lot of therapists are now making use of that as well. So that's just giving you a bit of an overview, really, of some of the other things available and the way to access it. And I believe that it's so important for people to be aware that therapy is, there's no stigma attached to it. It's something which is a real benefit to virtually anyone. And it just doesn't make sense to allow something to drag you down when, you know, simply you could actually talk to someone about it.
Mm. And something that I do want to quickly touch upon, obviously later on tonight we will have a new Prime Minister. Do you think there should be a more of a push with Theresa May putting mental health at the forefront of healthcare in the country?
Definitely. But it all comes down to money at the end of the day, and that's the big issue. But I think a greater awareness, you know, that these facilities are out there and there are opportunities. And it strikes me that, you know, the clients that come to see me, so many of them say that they have been living with the issue for many, many years and have really, really had to make an effort to actually come and address it. And a lot of my clients are young men, and I just find that so sad, I suppose, more than anything else. You know,
do you think that young men have been left behind in a lot of cases?
I think there is that, but I think also there's this tendency in our society and culture that men are supposed to have broad shoulders and just bear these sort of things, and that's not true. But I think, you know, young men or men in general have slightly been left behind in these things. But a greater prominence like we're doing here in terms of sort of promoting what is available, you know, and there is absolutely no problem with people going and accessing it. You know, the people should be aware of that and be prepared to actually talk about their problems.
So next month's edition is the final in the current series. What are we going to be talking about in a month's time then?
Well, I just wanted to do a bit of a summary on what we've spoken about and just try and bring it all together, but also to offer the opportunity for anyone, either in advance of the programme or during the programme, to text in or whatever message in, just to ask any specific questions, because I'm sure there are a lot of questions. It does raise a lot of questions, but I'd like to just see if we could just bring it all together in that programme.
Nigel, thank you very much. We'll see you in a month's time.
Thanks very much, Matt.
Thank you.
Talking Men with Matt Webb on Cambridge 105.
Welcome back. We'll be hearing from Marcel Hendricks in a couple of moments. He's going to be taking part in the 100th International 4 Days Marches in the Netherlands, raising money for Help the Heroes. But first...
Men's Bits. A roundup of this month's men's issues making the news.
France has lifted a ban preventing gay men from giving blood. François Hollande's health minister promised to overturn the lifetime ban in November when he pledged to tackle a taboo and discrimination. However, under the refined system which came into effect this week, a 12-month deferral period will remain in place for blood donations. A study by researchers in Sweden has shown men with prostate cancer in their family are at a higher risk of being diagnosed with the disease. Their study shows men with brothers who've had prostate cancer run twice as high a risk of being diagnosed themselves in comparison to the general population. In addition, the risk of an aggressive prostate cancer strain was typically as high in those whose brothers or fathers had the mildest form of the disease. And finally, there's still time to sign up for Cancer Research UK's East of England Man on the Run event. The 5K run and walk for men and boys takes place this Sunday at Great Notley Park in Braintree. Various Man on the Run events have taken place across the country since 2005. Last year, over £21,000 was raised for Cancer Research UK, taking the total raised since 2005 to over £120,000. To register for the event, visit manontherun.org. And if you've got a new story you'd like me to mention in next month's episode of Talking Men, email me, matt@cambridge105.fm.
Talking Men on Cambridge 105.
Now, Marcel Hendricks is going to be taking part in his 25th International 4 Days Marches in the Netherlands, raising money for Help for Heroes. I've been speaking to him and started by asking Marcel to tell us a bit about the event.
It's the biggest 4 Days Marches event in the world. It's usually participated by 46,000 people, but because it's the anniversary this year, they raised it to 50,000. One year, I think the maximum of different nationalities they had was 52. So mostly it's about 45 different nationalities that participate. That's civilians and military. And yeah, it's the 4 days long for with distances of 30, 40 and 50 kilometres.
And it's taking place next Tuesday through until Friday, the 23rd of July. How's your training been going for it?
I haven't done any training whatsoever.
Really? No training at all?
No, because I haven't got the time for it. But because I've done it quite a few times, I know what I can do and how fast I can go.
And in previous years, have you done any training for it?
When I started, yes, I did a lot of training. Like you start slowly with 15 kilometres for 1 day, then you start picking it up, and then you go to do 2 days of a long one, and yeah, you build it up till the 4 days marches. But
I was just going to say, actually, this is your 25th time of doing it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what are you going to be doing this time that's different to previous times?
This year I'm trying to raise some money for Help for Heroes, because it's my anniversary, but also the anniversary of the 4 days marches, so I wanted to do something special. And because I think Help for Heroes is a very good cause that I really support.
We'll talk about your Just Giving link in a couple of moments' time, but I've seen on the website that 50,000 people will be taking part in this event. It's absolutely massive, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You can start at the age of, 10 if you're becoming 11 in that year. I think the oldest that walks is about 82.
And of course, this is your 25th time of doing it. Are you going to be meeting up with some people who've done it before?
Yeah, I hope to meet some friends of mine, because I know friends of mine are walking as well. And if not, then you always meet people on the way and start chatting with people.
Moral support along the way.
Yeah.
So what does a typical day comprise of? How does it start off and end?
It starts with a massive start, queuing very slowly to the start, because you have to get your first knot in your ticket, and then it spreads around with people walking fast, people walking a bit slower, and
you have to get over the finish line by 5 PM, don't
yes,
you? If you don't get over it, do you get disqualified?
Well, if it's a few minutes, they sometimes make exceptions, but if you're a lot later, yes, you can't start the next day, because you have to pick up your next day card at 5 o'clock at the end, and if you haven't got that, you can't start.
It sounds like it's going to be packed full of endurance people, lots of people taking part who have done it before, as we've said, and more importantly, people who are new to it as well. It'll be their first times.
Oh, yes.
So what would you say to someone who's going to be doing it for the first time?
Well, for first time, I always recommend to train a lot, because especially on hot days, your feet are swelling up and you get a lot of blisters. So, training is something you have to do when you start, because I've seen people that don't try to do it without training and they make it to one or 2 days, and then you see them quitting.
I take it there's opportunities to pause to have a break along the routes.
Yes, you can sit anywhere. There are a lot of, in the little villages and towns, the cafes are open to the walkers. People have water if it's really hot. Sports centres open up especially for walkers and make a rest area, but also big military rest camps 3 times a day where people can stop as well, but where the military stops.
And I take it along the route there are marshals to support you if you become injured, for example.
Yeah, there's checkpoints on the way about 2 to 3 times, depends on the day, but also some marshals in the route that check the people, especially at the very end of the route, if people are really walking bad and if they need support. And if they need support, they are loaded into a van and be brought to the start again.
And when it comes to spectators, I take it there's going to be lots of people lining the route.
Yes, the best day is the last day, especially the last few kilometres. It's massive, it's roads thick, and people waiting for family or friends and with flowers. But also people who haven't got anyone walking, they're still wanted to see it because it's massive, and it's always nice to watch.
And when you cross the finish line, do you get some form of medal or an award?
Yes, you're there. First time, second time, there are medals, different medals, and then you get some numbers for on the medal, and then the 9 and the 10 and 11 are different medals again. And for my 25th time, it's a very different medal again.
I was about to say, you must have a massive cabinet now, full of them all.
Yeah.
So what's special about the 25th time of walking for you?
It's a goal I always set to myself, and in the family I'm the record holder at the moment. Even my twin brother hasn't walked that much, so he's at number 16 at the moment. That's the goal I always set myself. I want to do it at least 25 times and get that special medal.
And will you do it next year? Will you try and make it 26th?
No, I promised my partner not to do it, because half of the holiday is going up to into it. So at least we got 2 decent weeks of holiday.
So when it comes to coming back, are you going to be getting sort of rapturous applause from friends and family when you come back to the UK?
Back to the UK, not really, because most people don't know about it, or not really that interested, but in Holland it's quite massive, and especially in Nijmegen.
And if people want to find out more details and maybe want to sponsor you, what's your link for your Just Giving page?
The link for my Just Giving page is www.justgiving.com/fundraising /, and then Marcel-Hendrix.
And that's without a C?
That's without a C, it's just KS on the end. If they want some more information about the 4 days marches, they've got a special website as well. It's www.vierdaagse, is a number 4, and then DAAGSE.NL/EN, and then they get the British page on it.
Thanks very much to Marcel Hendrix there. And that rounds up another edition of Talking Men. Remember, we'll be back in a month's time. But if you've got a news story you'd like me to mention or cover during the programme, all you need to do is email me, matt@cambridge105.fm.
Talking Men on Cambridge 105.